Al, for our first featured speaker, all the way from Riverside, California, Debbie. Debbie, could you please come up?
Well, hello, everyone. My name is Debbie, and I'm an alcoholic. Am I talking too loud? Because it seems really loud to me right here. Okay. Well, anyway, you guys are a fun group. This is a bit of a culture shock for me. But the one thing I had noticed that didn't matter is that all the people that I've talked to, we have the same ism, we have the same disease, and we can all gather around in place, and we have that commonality, and that just blows my mind. There's a couple of young girls that I met, and Elle and Vanessa, and your spirit is just so, I just love to see the young people and how they grasp this program so easily, because I didn't. I grew up in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 2 years old. My mom left my dad and came to AA to get away from him. My dad came to AA to get my mom back, and that never happened. But my dad did stay in recovery, but my mom died an alcoholic. And So the disease goes way back on both sides of my family, so there was no way I was going to come out of this unscathed. But I did come into the program at 22, and I did stay sober for 13 years. I did not do what I'm doing now. I did not get a sponsor. Today I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I have, you know, sponsor women, and I did the 12 steps, and I do all this program stuff, and I come here and do this, even though when my heart goes, it's not my favorite thing to do. But my program to me is very, very precious, and I know that it comes and it goes so fast. And today I'm willing to do the things that I wouldn't be willing to do before. And when I got the 13 years, I hadn't done any of that. And one day, if you would have asked me the day before I turned 13, would I ever pick up a drink again, I would have told you no. To drink for me would mean to die. But I was so young, and I drank like an animal. I wasn't even old enough to go to bars, and now I have this new life, and I have friends that are normies, and we go on vacation, and they're having the little drinks with the little, you know, umbrellas, and it's like, well, I never did that, you know. I never drank like, you know, who I am today. How do I know I'm an alcoholic? I mean, I even talked to my husband, who had 13 years. We both had 13 years, and he said, well, neither one of us were doing anything. He said, you got to do what you got to do. And I honestly think he was on board, because by that time I was white knuckling it. I was a miserable, dry drunk. I don't know if you know what, any of you know what that is, but it's very painful, because I didn't have my solution, which was an alcohol to take away the crazy that was going on, and I was just really dry. And I think he thought maybe if I had a little drinky poo that I might be a little nicer or a little looser. And well, he got a whole lot more than he bargained for, I'm gonna tell you. So I'm here to tell you the disease never went away. It stayed there. It did push-ups. It was just waiting to take me out. And the best thing I ever did, because I knew, and I know now with a shadow of a doubt, that I'm an alcoholic. And I didn't stay sober continually from that point on. I had a year, got a resentment, drank again. Got almost 5 years, got a resentment, drank again. I did a little bit of this, did a little bit of that, but I still wasn't willing to do everything that was suggested to me. And, I mean, I just struggled with this program. I just had this bad taste in my mouth since I was a little kid, because I stood in an Alana club and I said, when I get older, I am not coming here. So it was really hard for me to embrace this program. So when the last time I went out, I'm coming up on 8 years in July. My sobriety date is July 4th, 2009. And I drank on my husband's 19th sober birthday. Ta-da! Another resentment. Can you figure out who? So at that point, I knew I was out for like an hour, literally. It wasn't about me wanting to drink. It was about me being broken. I had to learn the set-aside prayer. I had to forget about everything that I thought I knew about you, this program, my God. I had to have a complete new experience. And when I was willing to do that, I'm like, I got little gooseies. I just fell in love with this program. I fell in love with the people. You know, we're all different. We're all quirky. I mean, I just sit around and I look at everybody. I'm a people watcher, and I just love the differences. Where before, I used to feel like, well, I'm not like that or not that. You know, and it's like, I don't care. It's like trying to find my autonomy in this program is what keeps me here. You know, I don't have to be a cookie cutter person like everybody. I can respect what you do. And if it works for you and I think it might work for me, I can try it. Today I'm willing and I'm open to what's out there. I know that there's always more to do. It's like I'm never just going to. I was talking to Vanessa. We were talking about it's like the more I stick around, the less I know. And that's okay because that's a good place for me to be. Because when I think I know something, that's a bad day for me and anybody in my vicinity because stuff's going down. So I don't know. It's a trip. I love this program. I've had so many, you know, they say don't leave before the miracle. I left before the miracle. And there's not just one miracle. There's like, it's like my mom had to die in this disease, and I have her sitting in my living room, and I look up at her and I know that she did the opposite, and I could be that. If I pick up a drink, I could be just like that. We were just talking about yets. I have so many yets. You know, I did a lot of stuff when I was young, and I have a lot of stuff I didn't do. I mean, the whole 13 years, I was like, Zima came out, this came out, there's all these drinks, and I'm like, well, I never tried any of those drinks. Well, let me tell you what, drinking's overrated, you know? I drank when I was a kid, then 13 years later, that's like camping out at Dairy Queen and having like 5 blizzards. Who can do that? You know, that's just not fun. Drinking isn't fun. Today, being present, being here now, I have been diagnosed with anxiety disorder. So for me to stand up here and do this is like a miracle, because I didn't think I could do that without wetting myself at one point in time. I mean, I seriously did not think I can do that, and I'm not doing it. It's the higher power that works through me and makes me move, and it's like my first thought is never, oh gee, I want to go do that, I want to go to that meeting. It's like my first thought is always, oh, I don't need to go to that meeting today, you know, and oh, I don't want to take that call, and oh, I'm, you know, whatever. But I don't stick with the first thought. I don't stay there. It's like I'm not responsible for my first thought, but I am responsible for my next thought and my next action. And that's what I've learned in this program. It's like I can nurse that thought and I can take myself out, or I can, you know, train my feet to go to the meeting even when my mind says, you don't need that meeting. You don't need to pick up that call. You don't need to, you know, do these things. And that's what's keeping me here. You know, I'm really blessed to have a husband who's got 26 years in recovery. When I came back at 13 years, neither one of us was doing anything. So he said, I took one for the team, because now I'm working a program and I'm starting to get active and I'm out there. And before, I didn't have to do that. I didn't know I needed AA. I didn't know I needed you. I didn't need you. I didn't know what I didn't know. Now I know that if I don't go to a meeting in a week, Crazy Debbie's going to show up. And that's a fact. And now I know that. So now I have to go to meetings and I need this in my life. And so he's like, well, I want a life. I want to get active. And he has a real gift. He has a real gift to share in his message. He has a real gift with sponsoring men. And I don't know, we've been able to do this together. And it hasn't always been easy, you know, that year that I drank on his birthday, you know. He did a little Al-Anon here and there, and we had to get through it. It was rough. But in the long run, as long as you learn from it, and you don't make that mistake again. It's like, I don't recommend relapse. I don't think that's something everybody has to do. I think that for me, it was the best thing I ever got, because I believe in quantity, not quality. You know, I could have like a million years and be the most miserable SOB there is, you know. Or I could have 2 days and be, you know, flying on cloud, you know, 9, just living life. And that's that higher power, you know. That this is not a religious program, but it is a spiritual program. And for me, if I couldn't grasp that, that was the main thing for me. I had to have that. I just have to have something that's going to take my head, because, I mean, it just goes. You know, I wake up every morning and I don't have the obsession to drink anymore. It's like it's been lifted. But I do have the crazy, the head that's just like won't shut the heck up, you know, for a minute. Give me a rest. And I wake up every morning and I do steps 1, 2, and 3 right then and there. You know, I'm power over people, places, and things. And right now I'm unmanageable. And then, you know, I do 2 and 3 and I do this. And it's like I can get through the day. Because even now, even to this day, I am very uncomfortable in my own skin. I just have always, I've been that way since I came out of the womb. And drinking was my solution. I took a drink and boy, howdy, you look better. I look better. I felt better. Everybody was better. But after the, you know, the 20th drink and everybody, you know, I don't remember who was where or what was what. So never was a good thing. And I have an allergy with alcohol. I have never been able to just drink. I don't know who's going to show up. I never knew who was going to show up. It was nice Debbie, mean Debbie, who knows? I mean, I have like multiple personalities. And it was a crapshoot, you know? It was a crapshoot. Who's going to show up? It's kind of scary. Is someone going to let me know when I have 10 minutes? Okay. Where am I at?
You got 5 more.
I do not. I'm going to argue with this man about how long I've been up here. It sure feels like I've been up here for a very long time. I don't know. That's my experience, strength, and hope. That's all I can share. I don't really know what more. I mean, with 10 minutes, there's only so much a person can really share. I'm really looking forward to hearing my husband share. I haven't heard him share in a while. So thank you guys for having us and allowing me to be of service.
To introduce to you, Richard, with 26 years of sobriety. Thank you for coming, Richard. Come on up, please.
My name's Richard. I'm an alcoholic. That 26 years is a stupid number, FYI. Couple things. This is awesome to come and do this with you. And I'm going to tell you a little something. That Zima thing came out. It was no bueno. She was in the back seat of the truck. We were coming back from Arizona, and I don't know how fast those Zimas left. We were gone. It was like they sold them in a 4-pack, and I think it must have been 15 minutes. I said, "Are you back there?" And she's all, "F you." So I can tell you who shows up. And it's not the nice Debbie. The other thing is that music over there, makes me want to be over there. You know what I mean? I mean, I was the guy like, that's the stuff right over there. I was like, boom, 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 boom. I knew there was stuff going on over there that I needed to be a part of. You know what I mean? Everything's over there. So, and it was always like, I was always not allowed to be, I was like, there was always something going on in the other room. You know, always something going on in there. There's something going on over there. I'm not sure what it is, but it's pretty good. You know, wait a minute. Where's the newcomers? It's not good over there. I just think it's good in my head. But what happens is I turn into that same girl that, or same guy that, you know, anyway. So, I'm not the circuit speaker guy. I'm just, this is kind of like a banquet thing. And I remember my grand sponsor used to say, I always talk like this when I talk about my grand sponsor. He'd say, "Hey kid, the banquet speaker's got to be entertaining. You know, it's the Friday night speaker or the Sunday night speaker. They don't have to be funny, but the banquet speaker's got to be entertaining." Well, I'm no banquet speaker. I don't talk in lineage. I talk circular. So try to keep up. And my story's not funny. It's just pathetic more than anything. So I grew up, we're from Riverside. Obviously, my sobriety day is July 3rd, 1990. And I was 24 when I got sober. And and it's never too young to be sober. But there's a couple things in my early childhood that are important to me. And that is, my house was like... My house was like a hippie commune, okay? So our front door never locked, and there was always somebody there. I have an older brother, I had an older sister, and I have a twin brother. And we, it was just always a party going on at our house. There was always somebody there, and I started smoking weed with my mom when I was 10. And as a matter of fact, I was telling the story that she had a friend of hers that won a gold medal in archery in 1976, is when I started getting high. And we used to, she brought back the gold medal arrow, and somebody in our house turned it into a roach clip, and that's how we passed it around. I started getting high with a gold medal arrow. I didn't even think about that until tonight. So we lived, there was always a party going on, and I was always taking care of myself, you know, because mom was doing her thing and brothers and sisters were doing their thing, and we just kind of all fended for ourselves. So I learned how to make really good scrambled eggs and really good cinnamon toast. You know, I'd make that cinnamon toast that you put it in the broiler, you'd put a ton of butter on it, and you wouldn't put like mixed cinnamon and sugar, you'd dump separate the cinnamon and the sugar, and you put it in the broiler, and it would come out like 1 inch thick cinnamon goo goodness, right? And I don't know what this has to do with AA, but I would eat that with the scrambled eggs. They were perfect scrambled eggs. And that's pretty much that was my diet. I was probably, you know, like 90 pounds most of the way through high school. I was 120 when I got sober. I'm a whole another person now. And I had hair. I had like real long, like nice hair. You know, 26 years sucks. No hair. But and the reason I bring up the cinnamon toast is because my sister got sick when I was a freshman in high school. She was a senior, and she got sick real bad. She had a disease called lupus, and so little things that she would get sick over, little things that we would just like fight off. Our bodies just fight off common colds and stuff like that, and she'd get real sick. So as soon as that happened, the party stopped at our house, and so, you know, so we turned into like the health food store, you know, and it was no longer, the party stopped, you know, and like, and now that I'm getting older, you know, now that I'm a freshman in high school and coming into my prime, I'm not allowed to do it anymore. You know, it's like my mom stopped getting high and drinking, and it just everything stopped. And I was already at the point where I really didn't care. You know, I didn't care what was wrong with my sister. I wanted to do my thing, you know. And so we would get, you know, instead of the regular bread, we'd get like rice cakes, you know. And the cinnamon and that stuff didn't take to the rice cake, you know. And the eggs were brown. Like, I don't necessarily know that brown eggs are different than white eggs, but when you're 13 or 14 or whatever it was, I think they were. And we had this other thing called millet. It's like an oatmeal thing. Anyway, my life changed. And it was horrible. Like, I mean, literally, like, I was suicidal over these things. And, but, so she got sick, you know, and and I didn't care. You know, I loved her, but I didn't care because I was kind of already off and running and doing my thing. And, but it's hard. Sometimes I get stuck on this part of my story because it's hard. So, another thing about me that you guys should probably know, this is a fun part, is, I learned how to do, I'm a 2 week up, 3 day down guy. Okay, like, so I'd stay awake for a very long time, and I would go to sleep for a very long time. And one time, I came to, and things were happening to me that shouldn't be happening. And my first thought wasn't a homicide or suicide. It was, hey, if I continue to let this happen, I can get some free stuff out of this deal. So I learned how to let it happen, and it wasn't like fancy prostitution. It was, you know, I thought that was funny. it wasn't like, and no offense, if you were a legit call person, doing it the right way. I wasn't, okay? Like I said, I was 120 pounds soaking wet, but I thought I looked good. And I mean, I really did. But anyway, so in March of 1990, my sister, she had already had a transplant in kidney, and she had no business hanging out with me. And to be honest with you, it was like, I want to say she called me, but I don't know how she got a hold of me because we didn't have cell phones in 1990. And she said, somehow she got a hold of me, and she said, hey, I want to come hang out with you. And by this time, my mom and her had moved. Can you grab that water for me? Oh, is there? Oh, never mind. Thank you. And I don't know how she got a hold of me, but she, like I said, she had a transplanted kidney, and she had no business hanging out with me, but for some reason she said, hey, I want to come hang out with you. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to be... Our favorite little watering hole was this Carlos O'Brien's Bar in Riverside, and so that's where we went downstairs and whooped it up. And I said, I'm going to be at Carlos O'Brien's. If you want to meet me, that's where I'll be. And so she came to be with me, and I had just started to run, and she went tit for tat for a while. Now, a lot of my story is both. I'm an alcoholic, but a lot of my story has both stuff, both in it. So, you know, that hints the two-week up thing. But I was just getting going. You know, I just was getting started. And so she went tit for tat for a little bit, you know, and there goes chapter three. She went tit for tat for a little bit, and then she got sick. She said, I'm not feeling well. I got to go home. And my mom and her had moved to Laguna Beach. My mom had this thing in her head. My mom was kind of a whack job. God bless her soul, but she was kind of wacky growing up, you know, and real free, real loose, and like I said, just kind of a product of the 60s and this commune that I grew up in. But so she, in her mind, and I believe, I agree with it now, so that makes me a whack job. She moved to Laguna Beach. She thought the air was healthier for my sister. She thought it was just a better environment and all that stuff. So, but anyway, so my sister's with me, and about a week into this thing, she said, I don't feel good. I need to go home. And so somehow she got home, and a week later her kidney failed, and they couldn't get her into dialysis, and she died. And then I learned how to drink. And then I learned how to drink really good, because now I wasn't just drinking to try to anesthetize how I was feeling about what I was doing to get what I needed to get to feel the way I needed to feel. Now I was drinking to really kind of cut out. Like, I intentionally remember, like, drinking to die. But, like, I'm not the kind of guy that would actually be able to just die. I'm kind of a chicken shit that way, you know. But I do remember, like, drinking to die. But it wasn't working for me anymore. Like, I hear people say, I heard Johnny Harris say one time, you know, of course it works, blah, blah, it works, you know, and I'm like, you know what, bullshit, it didn't work. Like, I was drinking and I couldn't shut it off, you know, so, and I'm not here to be in a debate about what's the right way or the wrong way, because I think we're all here, we all have our own hell, and whether it works or it keeps working or stops working or whatever, it doesn't really matter. For me, I couldn't shut it off. Or maybe I could shut it off for a minute, but there was too much time in between that I couldn't, you know? And so, I know there's lots of stuff that I missed. Like I said, I'm super circular, but because I really enjoyed, like, my part of the story where I got sober. And so on July 3rd, or actually July 2nd is my belly button birthday, July 3rd, I went with some friends. I was trying to get out with some of my sister's friends, and I was trying to kind of make heads and tails of all this stuff, you know, and I was nursing a beer. I was the kind of guy that, like, I would drink as much as I could drink, but I'm not like her, man. She drinks, like, under the table she drinks. Like, she could just drink. You find the biggest guy in here, man, she just throws it down, and he doesn't even know what happened. But not me. If I'm too drunk, I'll lay down and the bed starts spinning. And if I put my foot down, the bed stops too fast. You know, and I'm like, it's bad, man. I can't control it. It's so bad. It's just, the bed stops too fast. It sucks. So on July 2nd, I'm trying to make heads and tails of this stuff, and we're at some lake somewhere, and I was nursing a beer all day, and I wasn't getting drunk, and I was just, I just was at my bottom. So I went to, long story short, I went and checked into a place. I asked my dad to help me out, and he checked me into this place called Charter Hospital in Corona, and I did like a medical detox, which was really just sleeping for 10 days. And And then I went into treatment. And so, but before that, I remember this gal here, because, you know, here's the story with her and I, is that we grew up in the same neighborhood. And so she would ride her, she was, I think, 13, and I was like 15. And she had this guy that she called a boyfriend, but she would go up the street and turn left to do her thing, and I would go up the street and turn right. But all I really remember, a lot of people may know this, but I just remember her on the 10-speed. She was wearing these Dittos, you know, these rust-colored Dittos, and she'd be out, beep, 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 and she'd turn left, and I'm like, I got to know her. Well, she takes me to my first AA meeting I ever went to. You know, she had already gotten sober. She got sober in March of 1990, and we were good friends. You know, by this time, she had already had a child, and Kimberly. And so Kimberly, and I just remember seeing her down at the plaza. She's pregnant, and we were just like really good friends, you know. And but not this time. She's taken to a meeting, and she promised, she said, I'm going to take you to this meeting, because she knew I had a problem. And she's like, I'm going to take you to this meeting. And we liked each other too, but like I was thinking, I think she said she promised me she'd take me for some ice cream. And I, but you know, hey, come to the meeting, I'll take you to some ice cream. And I was like thinking, ice cream, I want to get with you, you know, I don't want the ice cream. But the ice cream did sound pretty good, you know. But anyway, I went to this meeting, it's like the big meeting in Riverside, and I heard Johnny Harris talk for the first time, and I didn't hear anything that he said except for that he had, you know, he did a lot of time in prison and he did heroin. And for some reason, I perked up when I heard that. And I don't know if he's ever mentioned heroin again before, but for some reason, I because we sat in the back, and I just don't remember anything, you know. So I checked into this place, and I remember I was in this place. It was called the Oasis at the time. It was called Spencer, and it was in Orange County by Disneyland. And in walks the H&I panel for the day, you know, and there's this guy on the H&I panel, and he's wearing all black, and he's got this really nice red truck that he drove up in, and he's got a really nice gold watch on this hand, he's got a really nice bracelet on this hand, and I wanted what he had, you know. It's like I didn't know what kind of sobriety he had. I didn't know anything. I just wanted to, like, he looked like he felt good. You know what I mean? He looked like he just had his stuff together. And I never had my stuff together. I was like, you know, I mean, it's all funny kind of, but the reality is I was an animal. You know, like literally, I was just an animal. I was the guy that would steal from you, and then I'd go help you try to find what I took. And, you know, I mean, I was, you know, I'm that guy. And, I mean, I thought it was funny when I first heard it in here, but I was like, I really did that, you know? And I was a professional at stealing from my mother, you know, out of her purse. I was like Ace Ventura, dun, 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 you know, and I'd take 20s at a time from my poor mom, you know, and, like, you know, made amends for all that stuff. But so anyway, I went in with this guy, but I didn't know that he was connected to AA. Like, I didn't know what H&I was, you know. I just went up to him and I did the, will you be my sponsor thing? You know, you gotta ask. It's like asking a chick out for the first time. Will you go out with me? Will you be my sponsor? You know, it was horrible. And he's like, yeah, kid. And so his home groups were the Monday night Big Book group in Bellflower, his Thursday night step study meeting at the 502 Club in Covina, and the Saturday night speaker meeting in Covina. And he was super, super involved with the convention, the Southern California Convention and the Orange County Convention, and sponsorship. And my grand sponsor was Mac Brewster. They called him Waterfront Mac. And I just remember, like, this guy just taught me how to be a member of AA. You know, he did the things that you guys all do. It's a trick. You know, go stand at the door and greet everybody that comes through. And don't let nobody by, kid. Okay, bye. But, you know, and he walks over here and, oh, and clean the ashtrays when you're done, and help vacuum and sweep the floor, you know. But these meetings that we were going to, they were big. And they had, like, all these, they had, like, there was like this. There was like a bunch of people. And I'm like, hi, shaking hands, like, hi, welcome to AA. You know, I felt like an idiot, you know. And but he wouldn't let me buy it, and I think I was just afraid of him. Like, more than anything, he looked like Johnny Cash, and he just scared me, you know. And And I don't know why necessarily. I'm not afraid of Johnny Cash to speak up. But he just scared me. And he talked like this. Hey, kid, this kid, that kid, gonna do this, gonna do that, kid. And I was just like, okay. You know, and the truth is, though, is I was just terrified. I was terrified of not like necessarily... I was just afraid of going back to the way it was. And so I would sit in this club, and these old-timers would be in there, and they would always sandwich me, like, in the club. And I got a funny story. So, but before I tell you the story, I would always get them coffee, and they would play dominoes, you know, in this club. And it was the 502 Club. They had all the old coffee cups and stuff there. And I just love that. You know, it was like, for the first time, I didn't have to be over there where the music was. For the first time, I started feeling like I was part of something, you know. And here at Mac Brewster at the time, he was a year younger than I am now in sobriety, you know. And there was a way about him. He used to make me feel so good, you know. Like, he'd put his hand on my forearm, you know, how you doing today, you know. And I knew he meant it. You know, I knew that he really cared about how I was that day, you know. And then just being around those guys. But one time, I'm in the corner. They always put me in the corner. And Mac's talking to another guy that has 100 million years of sobriety. And they're arguing over who called who last. I called you last. No, I called you last, you son of a bitch. You know, and they're talking all this stuff. And I'm going like, what's going on here? And so finally the other guy looks at me and he goes, hey, kid, did they tell you about me? And I said, no, sir. And he said, I like boys and you look pretty good. I was like, what? Thank you. That wasn't the first time some guy said that to me. So Rick Evans, again, I'm real circular, but Rick Evans and Carol, they used to be a big part of this thing, and they moved into Riverside. And you know, one of the things that they did that's awesome is they, everywhere they go, they jump in and plug in. And I think they did that here. Well, they did it when they moved to Riverside from Orange County. And I just have one thing to say. Rick said something about mentioned motorcycles, something like that. I really didn't know what he was talking about. I just have two stories about these people, and that is our daughter, Kimberly. She's 33, and she's one of us. And so she was having some problems in her life and thought it would be a good idea to try to ram her car into the center divider on the freeway and check out. And she went in, not rolling side by side, but end over end across the freeway, and ended up snapping her neck. And so she did, you know, they call it the hangman break, right? That's the one when you get hung. And the C2. So, but anyway, so I had to go to the hospital and sit with her while they bolted one of those halos to her skull. And you know who was there for us? It was Rick and Carol. And they came, and we had to get a room ready for her, you know. And and you know, I was trying to be strong, and Debbie was trying to be strong, but you know who was really strong? They were strong, because we were basket cases, you know. And I think the reason I bring that up, and the other thing about Rick was, there's this funny story about our son when he was at that time, right around that time. So that was what, like 10 years ago or whatever it was. Rick was going to get directions on where to go, and my son was like, at the time he was like 14. It had to be less than that. He was like 10 or 13 or whatever. He was young. And Rick always tells a story about my child telling him, don't worry, I'll guide you. And Rick just thought that was the funniest thing, that this little kid's going to tell Rick he's going to guide him. And the worst part was, is Rick let him, you know. And so that's just the kind of things that happen here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you people doing this thing, this is awesome, you know, that... there's a lot of different things that I would want to say when I normally talk, but being here is a little bit different because I'm so connected to Debbie and I both are so connected to the to Rick. He asked us to come do this last year, and we couldn't do it because it was the Mother's Day weekend. But there's such a connection of people that you meet in here that you build these strong foundational relationships with. And in my case, when I was new, I grabbed a hold of, there was a group of us that kind of just went through together and came through, and we're still really close, and that's the case now. So the people that are new here that, I don't know why I'm looking this way, because it feels like this is the new side over here, but, you know, it doesn't matter where you go. If you're new, grab a hold of somebody else that's new, and then both of you grab a hold of somebody that's not new, and let them walk you through the steps. Let them walk you through the whole process. Because there's one thing I know for sure, and that's this, is that in the book it says, and we read it all the time, it says, if you've decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, well, you have to ask yourself, it begs the question, what do we have that you want? And because if, I think for me, because my sponsor asked me that question, and for me the answer wasn't like, I just want to be sober, like I don't want to just drink. There was something else. You guys, all you people in here had something, lightning bolts shooting out of your eyeballs. And y'all had like, there was always, you all seemed peaceful, you all seemed happy. Everyone was hugging and doing all this stuff, and it was like, there was like this secret thing going on that I didn't have. I was freaking miserable inside, and I wanted to die. When I met you people, you guys gave me the hope that, like, I could have a better life. So when the question was asked to me, if you decide you want what we have, well, what do we have? And the answer was easy. It was joy. It looked like you had some freedom and maybe some happiness, some serenity. You guys had all these little things about you that were very attractive to me, and I wanted them bad. And then he asked the key question, and are you willing to go to any length to get it? And the question was easy for me to answer, because you don't have to go through what I did, because you already went through your own hell. You know, I went through my hell and you went through yours, and we're all here. I'm here now because I want to be here, and my sponsor told me that a long time ago. You got to go till you want to go, then you don't got to go no more. And I'm here because I want to be here, you know, and this is my life. This is our life. So our daughter now, to back up for that story, she's been sober for 9 years. And she married, she got hooked up in rehab. She hooked up. No, woo, woo, woo. No, especially not from the girls. Woo! No. I've only seen it happen twice. No bueno. So he was there for 2 weeks, and he hit on her, and then they ended up separating and being sober and doing sober living, and then back together, and now they're married and both 9 years sober, and we got this little mean granddaughter. She's mean to Grandpa. But she loves her granny. She calls me. She FaceTimes me yesterday. And like I'm at work, and I know it's my daughter's phone, so I get this FaceTime call. And so I know it's going to be her. And I'm all, hi, Kyla. And she says, I forgot to tell Granny something. You got to call Granny and tell Granny. I'm all, call her yourself, click. She's four. So good. I love her so much, but God, she's so mean to me. I can't wait. I'm just going to tell her later on. I just can't wait. It's going to be like, I'm the one with the money. I'm the one who's going to shell it out for you, kid. But, you know, she had mentioned her father. Her father has been sober for 40 some odd years, 45, 46, something like that. And sobriety in our family, that's just what we do, you know. We don't do it perfect. It's not, I hate to use this expression, it's not all strawberries and orgasms. It's just, it's hard work sometimes to, you know, it's, living life on life's terms sometimes is tough. But what I know for sure is that we can't do it by ourselves, and I'm happy about that. You know, there's an oxymoron in Alcoholics Anonymous to me, and that is, as soon as I realize that I'm powerless, I become powerful. Because I get to rely on you people instead of myself. I get to rely on this loving God that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll tell you this one quick story and then I'll shut up. How much time do I have? Am I done? I'll keep going. Okay, yeah. Woo-hoo. I'll tell you this because it's important to me. Okay? I don't necessarily like to talk about the higher power stuff so much, and this is why, because I grew up and I was always so cautious about who was trying to tell me what, because people were trying to shove stuff down my throat with the religion thing, you know, and so when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was more interested in defending my right to not believe anything than to hear what you had to say to me. You know, and nothing was not working. You know what I mean? It was a real bad catch 22. Well, the guy that owned the place where I was in treatment, he used to tell me the lights are on and nobody's home, and I was like, oh God, I hated it. And I'd run up to him, are the lights on yet? And he'd go, no, the lights aren't on yet. And so there was this guy there. His name was Richard. And he had the light. He, you know, in chapter one in Bill's story, where it doesn't say his name, but it's Ebby Thatcher, and he comes into the kitchen, and he says there was something about his eyes. He had that starry-eyed look, and that's what this Richard was like for me. He was there was something going on. I couldn't describe it to you. I just knew that I wanted what he had, and I knew there was a connection there. I just didn't know what it was, and. So this guy tells me the lights are on and nobody's home for the last time. And I walked up to the stairs. There was four beds in this room. And he said, and so Richard is on his knees at the foot of his bed praying. And I just remember, saying, it's like step one, step two, step three. Like, why would I turn my will and my life over to the care of God? Because I believe that it could help me. Why do I believe that it can help me? Because I'm totally screwed. You know what I mean? It's just as simple as that. Like, I do it backwards. 3, 2, 1. Why would I do all that? And then I go forward again. And that day, it happened for me. And I know that if you have a sponsor and you do it formal, like I do formal steps with my sponsees, and formal steps were done with me with my sponsor. But that day, I remember going in that room, and I saw him on his knees praying, and I just remember thinking, that's it, that's got to be it. So I went to the foot of my bed, and I got on my knees, and I started praying to his God. And I remember saying, I don't know what you are, because at the time I heard, don't pray into the doorknob, and, you know, I don't know. I just heard a lot of stuff, you know. And I remember saying, I don't know if you're a doorknob, I don't know if you're the electricity that runs through the wires, but whatever you are that's helping him, can you help me too? And that was the beginning for me it was a beginning. You know what I mean? It says it was just a beginning for me to start figuring this thing out and to realize that without higher power, I'm nothing. I can't do it. And so this has been a treat for me. You guys have been so nice. Bob, wherever you are, it's been an honor to be here. And you guys, I mean, we were laughing about it on the way up here because, like, can we bring you an escort and, like, all this stuff? And I was thinking, I got maps on my phone. I don't need a freaking escort. Like, I felt when I was coming here, like, the helicopter was going to drop us down on the red carpet and freaking brought us a cake and set it there. And I'm thinking, is this cake for us? Like, you know, can we get you some more water, some more cokes? What are we cooking do for you? Rick sent a little package of cigars. For me, you know, I'm like, okay, that's it. It's just, I'm just telling my story at an AA meeting. I mean, thank you so much for your generosity and for allowing us to share with you guys. It's been a pleasure.